Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Hey, it's Pro Sports Podcasters, and it's your guy, NWB, here. I'm with Justin Williams, as always.
How's it going, guys?
And today, we have a very special guest. He comes to us from the West Coast, some say the best coast. He is the senior writer at Bleacher Report, the LA Lakers expert, and he's an NBA capologist, so you better believe it. He knows the numbers inside out. Name is Eric Pincus. You're going to want to follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Eric Pincus. Eric, mate, how are you doing today?
Oh, not bad at all. Thanks for having me on, gentlemen.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming back.
Of course.
So if you don't mind, I think I have a kind of a burning question here, just basically being from Toronto. As we know, the trade deadline, or trades have begun, let's say, and our beloved Kyle Lowry might be going to Miami. What do you think of that?
I mean, it's just rumors at this point. But I would say the Raptors have to decide what their future is. And clearly they have invested in Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam and Anunoby. So you've got a nice young core. But the team hasn't been great this year. And Lowry is certainly aging out. How long does he have? Is he going to be worth another $30 million? And that's a pretty big decision to make. So if the answer is no and they're ready to go in a different direction, and even if that means taking a little bit of a step back to be something more powerful later, they might have to go in that direction. So if you're going to make a trade, it's not an easy thing to do when a guy's making $30.5 million, but you know the Heat have some friendly contracts, guys who maybe aren't the reason why the trade is made as far as the Raptors, but are the numbers to make it work. So guys like Kelly Olynyk, in theory Goran Dragic or Andre Iguodala, who make a big chunk of money, or even Myers Leonard, who's injured and out for the year, makes just under $10 million. But there would have to be some sort of value that the Raptors get, and that's the trickier part, because the Heat don't really have much by way of draft picks to offer, and so you're talking about young guys. I don't think you're going to get Tyler Hero, but maybe I don't know if they would include Duncan Robinson. I'd be skeptical, but maybe Kendrick Nunn, and there's some other young guys like Akpala and a few other prospects. So that might be the direction. I don't think you're going to get a ton of value out of Miami because they don't have any real draft considerations.
Following that notion, the Raptors would lose a key veteran player. Do you feel like Siakam and VanVleet could become their like veteran presence, if you will? And then, because like, I mean, everyone needs a vet to kind of turn to. So, do you think they trade for like an older person, like a veteran?
I mean, if you're gonna trade for a veteran who's older, you might as well keep Lowry. You know what I mean? So if you want to win, Lowry is their leader. Lowry is a guy who at the highest level knows how to deliver. And so if you're Toronto and you're going to move on and you're going to go in a different direction, if you're getting a veteran back, it's got to be someone younger. So a younger veteran, similar to how VanVleet, even though he's only been in the league, like, is this what, fifth season, I think? He's a vet at this point because he's got championship experience. He's shown what he can do at the highest level. You would need a similar young veteran who fits in that court. And you could say, well, fine, get a short-term guy who helps them win and complements these young guys, but maybe isn't somebody who's around long-term. But if you're giving up Kyle Lowry, is that all you're getting? You have to get something that's future-leaning. So maybe if it's somebody on a 2-3 year deal who's at, you know, someone they can build around, who's maybe in the 15 or so million dollar range, $10 million range, $12 million range, or maybe 20 even, but it has to be someone really valuable. I don't know exactly who that is, but you know, you throw out a random name. Like, you know, if you could get Zach LaVine and add in a high athletic young scorer. He's a veteran, right? He's been around quite a while, but he's only like, I think he's like 25 or something ridiculous. Like it's insane at how young Zach LaVine is, based on his production. He's one of the best young scorers. I'm looking it up as we speak, and he's what he was born in 1995. So I mean, the kid is a baby still, but he's got plenty of years of experience, and maybe he's not like a lockdown defender, but suddenly you put in Van Vliet and LaVine, and then you've got Siakam and Anobi, and you've got a lot of power as far as scoring. And I'm not saying that's even on the table, but it's kind of like the idea of don't just trade Kyle Lowry for some veteran to get you wins, because you're not going to win this year without Kyle Lowry. You need somebody who's going to be there who replaces him long term. And LaVine is only under contract for one more year. So
right.
They would have to be confident that there's a way to keep him. And it's not a short term thing. But if they can get that confidence, then maybe that's, you know, the kind of idea, maybe not Zach specifically, but the idea of what might be the right path for the Raptors.
Mm-hmm. I see. That's an interesting take.
Right. And just staying in the Atlantic division, because there's been a bit of a shakeup this year. Philly have come back with a vengeance. They're firing, and Boston have always been playing at that high level that we know. And then we can't forget the elephant in the room, that is the Brooklyn Nets. Kevin Durant has come back. He's like a new signing. James Harden came across in the trade from the Rockets. Can you see the Celtics making a move to try and bolster their stock so they can keep up with Philly, Brooklyn, and also the Raptors?
Absolutely. You know, the Celtics are a team that every year there's a lot of buzz on the trade deadline, and they tend to be actually pretty conservative around the trade deadline. They tend to talk. There's a lot of talk, but not a lot of action. And they've made some huge trades in recent years, but a lot of them, or most of them, have been the offseason variety, like Kyrie Irving, getting him in the first place, then doing the swap, Rozier for Walker. The variety of moves they've made have been more offseason. But that said, they do have a gigantic trade exception that they created when they sent Gordon Hayward. Hayward was going over to the Hornets, and so they made a deal. Instead of him just leaving as a free agent, they did a sign and trade. And by doing so, they created a trade exception about $28.5 million. The challenge there is that they also have a hard cap. And so they can't use all of that outright. They can't just add in $28.5 million, because they're at about $117 million in salary, roughly. And so, like I said, the number was $139. So they could add a decent amount. And if they traded, they could, for instance, let's say they traded for, they needed a center, and they were able to make a trade, and they sent out Tristan Thompson and subtracted $9 million, but brought in $28.5 million. They can't go over that 28.6, really. Now they'd be able to make it all work. So because of their trade exception, and then you couple that with, you know, they've had injuries. Marcus Smart's out. Kemba wasn't available for most of the start of the season. They had an awkward stretch with safety and protocol, you know, COVID safety protocol stuff, that they didn't have their full team. So I think they've underperformed more on availability necessarily than talent. So I do think that's a team that has all the motivation in the world to climb, because you mentioned you've got Philadelphia and Brooklyn ahead of them in the division. You've still got the Bucks to deal with. The Miami Heat are bad right now as far as record, but they've had similar issues. Jimmy Butler was out for a while. He actually, I believe, caught the virus. So, you know, they're a team to consider. Toronto, again, a team that hasn't been great record-wise, but certainly should or could be able to turn around. Indiana's good. And you have upstarts like Atlanta. It's a competitive East. And there's more volume of above 500 teams in the West. I don't know if that's true. Is that still true? Yeah, it's true. There's like,
yeah.
What, like 11 teams at 500 or better in the West, and only five in the East. But
yeah,
Boston is in that top five. And so there is some softness for them and motivation. And they're not going to have any sort of cap room this next summer because they're so invested. So I would expect them to look and be a little more aggressive to make a deal this year, especially because they don't have to give up much. They have all their own firsts, so they don't have any. They used to have a ton of picks. They don't have a ton of picks anymore. They have their own, all of them, but they don't have anyone else's. But they can definitely be in a position to add in one key piece. And if you ask me what kind of piece they need, it's, you know, they're relying on Daniel Tice and Tristan Thompson, and I don't think Thompson's been great for them as their big guys. They moved out of Enes Kanter. I would argue they probably need some size if they want to compete with Joel Embiid and Milwaukee. I don't think you need size necessarily with the Nets, although it'd be nice to have.
Right.
And if you want to be like, if the Lakers get there, you need size. But I like Boston. I think that they're a team to keep an eye on, especially with that trade exception.
I was going to say, I kind of fear Boston in the East. Now, a name that's been floating around recently is Andre Drummond for multiple reasons. He's having a good year with 18.6 points a game, 14.2 rebounds, 1.6 steals, and 1.2 blocks. Now, he currently gets paid on his contract of $28.8 million, like, particularly this season. Where do you see him fitting? Do you see him staying with the Cavaliers, or do you see that big man moving somewhere else?
Well, that's it's a good question. The Cavaliers are, you know, as we're recording this, they've gone on a little bit of a dip. But they've been in the top eight for a bit. Right now they're out of it, but I don't think they've given up on the season at all. I still think, you know, they're what, like two games out of the fifth seed. So they're only three games behind the Celtics. So there's some motivation to make the playoffs. There's always motivation. But when you have young players like Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, you know, the rookie Okoro, whatever else they have, and you make the playoffs, that's great for their development and experience. And I know they just lost Larry Nance for at least a month, maybe two, to an injury. They haven't had great luck, but they've got a lot of depth. And they have Kevin Love, I don't even think he's played yet, who's making a ton of money. Getting out of his contract would be great for the team. I just don't know how many teams are interested in a veteran who's been hurt all year and hasn't been great. He hasn't been dominant for a long time, and he's making like $30 million, $31 million a year. But in the case of Drummond, because he's a free agent, like they can give him an extension and he could stick around, and he could accept that under the idea that maybe I'm not going to get a max contract. Maybe the market for centers is lower than it used to be. And for the most part, it is. I'd be surprised if he's a max guy just because of the nature of centers. But at the same time, you know, he's elite at rebounding. He's a very good steals and block center. He's a really talented player. I don't know if he's ever been in a winning situation. And I think some teams are a little skeptical that he could be a foundational piece for a winning team. You know, the Celtics could absolutely use him, but the problem there is that their trade exception that we talked about is just shy of what they need. He's 28. The exception is 28.5. They can bring in up to 28.6, not a dime more, and he makes 28.7.5, which is about $150,000 too much. So he's not somebody the Celtics can get with that exception, but he would be perfect for them. Which is just, you know, unfortunate. It's not going to happen, at least for that exception. So I do think they've got to decide, is he someone they want to reinvest in? Is Jared Allen a younger, cheaper version of that? And it's not like Drummond is old. He's only been in the league 8 years, I believe. This is his ninth. So those are decisions I don't know if they've made yet. But if they aren't planning on bringing him back, then they absolutely should look to trade him. But again, you get into the same Lowry kind of conversation. It is not easy to move a $28, $29 million contract in this environment with so many teams with hard caps.
Right. And that's the thing. This is a new time that we're in, especially for front offices, because of the lack of fans in the stands and the way the virus has impacted the sport. I guess some teams have had to have been a bit more tighter with the way they make their moves. But being from L.A., I have to ask about the reigning champion Lakers out there. They're no stranger to making moves, and I know when you're out, you got to try and stay at the top. What are you seeing for them, and also for their hallway compatriots, the Clippers?
Well, both teams are in a similar position where they have, I think it's 13 players, or 14 players. Let's see, the Clippers have 14, not including two ways. The Lakers have 14, but they can't even bring in a 15th right now because they don't have the the room under the hard cap to bring in a 15th. I know that opens up for the Lakers around the 24th. I haven't run the numbers for the Clippers, but it's looking at it, it's actually later for them because they have more money. Although that may not be true. Yeah, it's in, I'd say March, early March. So again, anything that they do, either team, if they're adding, they have to subtract an equal amount or subtract more. They can't add salary. So in the case of the Lakers, they're pretty much coasting. They're one of the best records in the league. They've lost a few games here and there, some because Anthony Davis sat or LeBron sat, some because they just let a game or two slip away, but they've pretty well dominated this year. So if I were to say, what do they need? They could use Marcus Hall insurance in case he's in foul trouble or hurt, given his age. And he hasn't been great for them, but they've been good with the combination of Gasol and Montrez with Anthony Davis available to play center. And they have Markieff Morris, who's not even playing. So if they added like a true 7 foot or 6 foot, 10, 11 defensive minded center who can block shots, it would be an insurance move in case Gasol is hurt or in foul trouble. And so it has to be someone who's willing to be in a place where they don't play extended weeks at a time. They're just, you know, did not play coach's decision. And they play when they're needed. And if they don't play at all, then they don't play at all. And they're happy to be chasing a ring and to be a part of this. They could use, in theory, another big wing defender to guard the likes of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. But they've been relying on combinations of Kyle Kuzma and obviously LeBron and Anthony Davis and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Even Dennis Schroeder guards well against bigger guys because of he's got really long arms. He's got a great wingspan. Wes Matthews is in the same boat as Markieff Morris. He's not even part of the rotation right now. And they've got this kid, Talen Horton-Tucker, who's been really fantastic for them, really a nice young developing prospect. So I don't think they have anyone who can even crack the rotation if they add. So I don't think there's a need on this team. There's more of a couple of wants. Like, they would want to add one more, maybe big man in case Gasol gets hurt, or one more wing defender in case of emergency. But given that they can't even play the guys they already have, I don't see any urgency. On the Clippers side of the coin, you know, my concern is that they're really good. They beat most teams. They win by a good margin. But when it gets to close games, like we saw the other day, and they need to close out, and, you know, admittedly, they haven't had Paul George for some games, or Kawhi was out here and there, but they don't have a true point guard. And I feel like they have the same issue they had last year where they're freewheeling, let whoever has the ball create kind of situation. Let Paul George create. Let Kawhi create. It doesn't really work as well in the clutch or in the playoffs, because that's where the defense tightens up, and especially in the playoffs where they can really scout you and force you to run go to your second, third options in an offense. That's not great when you're Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and you're not really true playmakers. You can average 5-6 points a game, but not be a point guard. And those numbers, I think, drop in the playoffs down to 3 or 4 or 5, and suddenly that team can't score at the end. So like we mentioned with someone like Kyle Lowry, he would be a fantastic, I mean, that would be an elite level addition for them, defensively, offensively. And if it costs them Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams, Beverley's an emotional leader for them, and he has another $14 million next year. I don't know if the Raptors would want that. But the challenge, as we talked about, is that, fine, you add in Lou, you add in Beverley, you're at 21, and you're not at 30. And if you're trying to bring back somebody at that level, you have to cut someone else. And Zubac has been really solid for them. I don't like the idea of Ibaka being the only big. So how else would they fill that hole? You know, these are the kind of questions that they would have if they were to make a move. I think they definitely need a point guard. I just, they may be better off waiting until the buyout market, similar to the Lakers, instead of making a trade. Just wait until after the trade deadline, see what vets are cut by teams that are no longer in the playoffs that want to give their minutes to younger guys, and get those banner or ring chasers at the minimum. That's how the Lakers got Markieff Morris. That's how the Clippers got Reggie Jackson. They may be able to do the same this year and get somebody who fills all those needs without going and making a big, massive trade by just adding somebody at the minimum where it prorates down. Both teams can add a minimum guy later. They can't even add a minimum guy today if they wanted.
Yeah, I was going to say that's just going back to LA for a quick second there. I really don't feel that having just a buck as your center is the biggest thing. You definitely need to add either another shooter or a bigger body, like, to kind of help with the rotation. But that's where my almost second question kind of lines in with Lonzo Ball. Like, he's having a heck of a year just looking at his stats right now. And I'm going to assume that the Pelicans are going to do everything, or sorry, New Orleans, yeah, they're going to do everything they can to re-sign him, no?
I don't know about that. The challenge there, so they negotiated before the start of the season an extension, and neither side could come to terms, which means that they were apart. Now, were they massively apart? That's a good question, and we're not going to get the answers there. Certainly not from the team. Maybe the agent has incentive to leak it. That's Rich Paul of Clutch Sports. Maybe, you know, we get a sense of that at some point. Teams are usually more private, and agents tend to talk to the media a little bit more and try to manipulate things through the media. I don't know what's going to happen there, but clearly they weren't on the same page. And that's a team that is paying Steven Adams a decent chunk, paying Eric Bledsoe a lot next year. Brandon Ingram's a max level guy. And then they're going to have to pay Zion at some point. They're going to have to decide on Josh Hart. And they have all these young guards like Kira Lewis and Alexander Walker. I'm not sure where they're going to go because they've got a lot invested. And as hyped as you might want to hype them, they're below 500. They're showing signs of life. They've won a few in a row. And if you asked me a week or two ago they were like 7-12. Right now, as of this recording, they're 10-12. So they've started to at least look like a playoff team. Lonzo's really talented, and the areas where he's really good, and the areas where he's really bad, he's really bad. I don't know if Bledsoe is the long-term answer either. So I think this is a team very willing to make trades. They have a lot of picks that they can offer, be it from the Lakers, they have some from Milwaukee. They have flexibility. They have a lot of young players. They have guys like JJ Redick who make $13 million who are maybe superfluous and could help pad a trade. I do think Lonzo Ball is very available. I think JJ Redick's available. And I think that's a function of the Pelicans aren't really where Lonzo is in his demands for in extension. At least that's what I think to be the case. And, we'll have to wait and see how that actually plays out. So I wouldn't be shocked if Lonzo's traded. There were some recent reports, I don't remember from whom, that the Bulls were in some way a consideration. I don't know for who that would be for. Maybe Markkanen as a fit next to, as a shooter next to Zion. But I know Markkanen just got hurt. He's out a few weeks. We'll have to wait and see. We have a bit until the trade deadline, right? It's in March. There's no urgency yet. Things will pick up as we go, but I would say at this point, teams are definitely starting to realize, okay, one, we're not in first place, except for the two teams that are, and decide like, okay, where are we headed? Because if we're not headed where we want to, we either want to double down to get us there or we want to back off and start to think about the future. And that's how teams move off of good players. If the Pelicans are thinking about the future and that future doesn't include a Lonzo Ball extension, then you want to move him before then so that you can get some value.
I was going to say, here's my quick little bold prediction, is that Bradley Beal moved. That is all. All right, I just think he's going to be gone.
And unless he says, I want to go, I don't. They're going to move him because they love him, rightfully so. And he's under contract, and it's not expiring anytime soon. It is expiring at some point, but not yet. So he can leave after next season. He has a player option. So it is coming, that decision. But I don't think they're going to rush it. So I think they're going to do everything they can to keep him, but they are pretty lousy. You know what I mean? So situation there. He good guy and they love him and he's really loyal to what's happening, or at least the franchise, not to what they're doing on the floor, but to that city and to those people. So hopefully they'll be able to find a way to navigate this so that they're not awful. Remember, yeah. You know, as bad as they are, they're only 5 games out of, or 4.5 games out of the playoffs. It's, you know, a little run. It's not out of the question, but right now that you look at that team and you don't, I don't see it coming, but I'm not going to put my money on a Beal trade, but it's certainly possible for sure.
Nice.
All right.
I look forward to seeing how all that plays out. Eric, thank you for your time today. Once again, you can find Eric Pincus on Twitter and Instagram at Eric Pincus. Eric, mate, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, anytime, guys. Appreciate having me on.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to join the Pro Sports Podcasters Facebook group where you will be able to interact with the hosts and talk to other sports fans. Now back to the show.
Right. You and I have talked about it before, but I'd say Russell Wilson deserves to have had a MVP by this point in the NFL.
And why is that, Kobe? It's because he plays in the West Coast.
That's right. He plays in Seattle where nobody cares about the NFL.
Everyone's already watched the first wave of games. So they're sitting down to have dinner or whatever. They don't care about what happens in NFC or AFC West. They just catch the score in the morning, maybe. I know fantasy is changing that a little bit, but not everyone plays fantasy. But yeah, Wilson, it seems like, is now angling for a trade. He's come out in the media this week and said, hey, I'm not happy getting sacked 300 or 400 times. I'm not happy being put on my back all this time. And I get it, because eventually he's going to get hurt.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think some of that is posturing, though. I think some of that is just him. He's using the media to kind of, push Seattle in the direction of maybe we should just draft protection. It's funny because I'm a Seattle fan. My wife's a huge Seattle fan. And every year when we do our little, you know, draft prep of who's each team going to draft this year, you and I are going to do a full mock draft, but I always spend a little extra time on who I think Seattle's going to pick in their, say, first three picks, and who Denver's going to pick in their first three picks, because those are my two favorite teams, right? So I'll look a little bit beyond the first round, or even the second round in some cases, depending on where their picks land, and give my idea of what I would do if I was general manager at the time for either of those two teams. And every year, offensive line is high on my Seattle list. And it seems like every year it comes to their pick. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, they're definitely going to draft so-and-so. He's been passed over by a couple of teams. This guy is definitely first-round talent. They got a chance of grabbing at the top of the second round. This is going to be fantastic. And then we'll trade up into the first round and we'll take Rashad Penny.
Well, not just that.
And I'm left going, wait a minute, are you kidding me? You're gonna trade back into the first round and grab a running back when you still haven't got any protection for Russell Wilson? What are you thinking there? It just seems like every year they ignore the position because Russell Wilson is such a good scrambler, they think they can get away without it.
So, not just that. Well, I'm going to come back to Penny because you've raised a good point about Penny. But the thing with this year is Seattle doesn't have a first-round pick anymore.
It's gone.
That's flown away to New York in the Jamal Adams trade, which, now here's the thing. Jamal Adams is a great pass rusher, and people miss that. People miss that. He's not just a safety. He's not just a box safety. He does a dirty work at the defensive line, so he does two or three different jobs on defense.
Oh, he's a defensive wrecking ball, completely.
Right.
Right.
So that's good, but on the other side of the ball, when he does the hard work to get possession back, you need to try and extend the drives. What did we see in the Super Bowl? We saw one team get crushed because their offensive line was banged up. If they want to compete in the NFC against a team like Tampa Bay, against a team like the 49ers and the Rams that have bruising defensive lines.
Yeah, in their own division.
Yeah, just to get out of the division, let alone get to the championship game. Unless they're going to get their offensive position players to block for them, they need more protection. So, Rashad Penny, here's the deal. Chris Carson is off contract now. He's a free agent. I don't know, he's 26 or 27 from memory, so he's kind of at that AJ apex where general managers say, we may not want to pay you that much. So, Rashad Penny is a guy they drafted high. does he finally get a chance now as a starting running back, or are they going to bring someone else in to compete with him?
The brutal part is in the limited amount of time we've seen Rashad Penny on the field, and the limited amount of time we've seen DJ Dallas on the field, DJ Dallas has been better. Rashad Penny has not shown me anything worthy of a first-round pick thus far.
I feel like before he went down injured, not the season just gone, but the season before that, when in that run to the playoffs, when they, I think that was when they rang up Marshawn Lynch,
yes,
to come back. But Penny was showing some signs that he could usurp Chris Carson one day. So my thing is this. I think we're going to call last season a wash because he's come back from the ACL. There's rehab. I feel like this is the season where we say, where are we at with Rashad Penny?
So you're saying Carson's gone?
With the current salary cap landscape, the salary cap is going to go down. Seattle has too many needs to address. A running back is a luxury pick at this point. They need to get protection, as we've talked about, and they still need help on defense. So where's the money going to go for like a big-name running back?
No, I agree, but there is a couple of things working in their favor to potentially do a deal with Carson, though. Mm. So the first thing is something we mentioned right off the bat. Seattle is a a black hole of a market.
Right.
So Chris Carson has not gotten the respect that he really deserves. He has been a top 10 running back these last few seasons. Only, unless you're a fan of Seattle, you probably don't know that.
Right.
Right? He is not in the discussion anywhere as a marquee back. So I don't think there'll be that many teams really looking for a Chris Carson to add. And his value is going to be depleted because of the lack of interest in him just as a number one runner while he spent his time in Seattle.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one, to be honest. I feel like Pittsburgh, they need a running back because James Conner's not coming back. The New York Jets will need a starting running back. We don't know about LaMichael Pirin yet. We just don't know. I feel like there's teams out there that could do with Chris Carson's services.
For how much?
That's the sticking point. So you're right. Carson could negotiate a relatively team-friendly deal with Seattle.
What would you consider team-friendly at this point?
I'm thinking a 1 or 2 year deal, maybe a 1+1. So 1 year. So this season upcoming, and a club option for sure, because we know franchises like that club option where they can say, we don't really want you. But if you have a good season, then they kind of have to keep you. In terms of the numbers, let's see. Seattle Seahawks, what are they looking like for next year, money-wise? The salary cap. The good old salary cap. Because that's another reason why I feel like they're going to keep Penny. Because they invested a lot of draft capital in Penny, and he's cheap.
Oh, no, they're keeping Penny. They're keeping Penny. I just don't know if he'll be their number one. That's the thing here.
And also, Seattle doesn't have a third-round pick. That's one thing we need to consider. All right, so they got a little bit to play with, $14 million, but we talked about other needs. So I would say a deal like $5 or $6 million. It's not going to be double digits.
No, see, I was actually thinking right on six. I was thinking that would be a team-friendly deal. I think Seattle for six would be a team-friendly deal that makes sense. I think if he goes elsewhere, he gets maybe eight.
Right.
Maybe, right? That's a big maybe. Because running backs aren't, like, they're not huge commodities right now.
No. Front offices are fading the running back position. Well, most. There's still a few that hang on to the old school thinking, but most of them are shifting towards the James Robinson, hey, we can just get a top production from a dude that we didn't even draft, you know?
Exactly. So, I mean, if you look around the league, there's a lot of running backs, veteran running backs even, or guys with a little bit of time under their belt that can be bounced around to different teams for probably a pretty good price.
Yeah.
You got a fleet of running backs in the Patriots. They're not all going to be there. You've got, in Kansas City, you've now got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darren Williams, and you got Damian Williams coming back. Wait, how much is left on Damian Williams' contract?
I'm pretty sure it's a year. I'm pretty sure he's got 1 year left.
He's got 1 year.
Because he didn't void, because he opted out, this year didn't count towards his service.
Oh, so he has at least 1 year.
Right. So it might even be two. I think his contract might be up in 2022. But I know Edward Solaire got a lot of run in the Super Bowl, but Damian Williams comes back, he's fresh. Maybe he's working out while he's been away. Maybe he just takes back the number one spot.
That's very possible. That's very possible because he was a very productive running back when on the field when he played there.
He was a bruiser.
Buffalo's got, what, three or four running backs?
Yeah, and you can tell that they're not keen on Devin Singletary. The fact that they not only drafted Zach Moss last year, and then went ahead and got Devonta Freeman off the street towards the end of the season.
Exactly.
If they can, that's like a Carson kind of place. Like, they'll either get a Carson-esque kind of running back, or maybe they'll try to address it during the draft. But I feel like they can probably improve their pass rush and maybe their secondary.
Yep. Rams have a fleet of running backs.
Yeah. Henderson. Who's the other fella? Cam Akers is now running the show there, and they're still...
Yeah. Brown.
Malcolm Brown. I think Malcolm Brown's free agent at the moment.
Okay.
Memory. I don't think they'll bring him back.
Right. So, I mean, when you've got, like, there's so many running backs that will be floating, it's going to be hard as a true number one, like a Chris Carson, to demand much.
Yeah.
Because it comes down to why should we pay you, say, $7 million when we can get Malcolm Brown for two?
Yeah. I mean, even someone like Le'Veon Bell, I know he looked kind of a bit off towards the end, but he's going to be looking for a new deal as well. The thing with this offseason is because of the cap situation across the league, players are just going to be forced to just take one-year deals, like these prove-it contracts, just to show what they can do, or they're just going to have to take undervalued deals over multiple years just to stay in the game, literally.
That's right. As far as the agents' side of things, it's going to be a very difficult year to negotiate favorable deals for the players themselves. Unless you are the franchise, right? Unless you're the franchise, good luck negotiating a favorable deal.
Even then, Cove, you look at Pittsburgh, they pretty much went cap in hand to Big Ben and said, hey, you need to renegotiate that deal. You're the franchise player, but if you want to win, you're going to have to restructure that deal. Otherwise, we can't compete.
I'm still interested to see what happens in New Orleans with their $100 million over the cap. I can't wait to see what happens there. I mean, a good portion of it's gone because I think Breeze is going to just forfeit his.
His $24 million or whatever. And then released Nick Easton yesterday, the guard. He was $6 million against the cap. So they've still got another $70 million to work with between now and that date. I don't think I've ever seen a team go over the cap. You know what I mean? They always find a way to massage it. Yeah, I feel like the commissioner would probably slap him if they... Well... That's another thing. I think the commission's going to slap a few teams for the COVID breaches. The NFL has not been happy with the way some teams have been going about managing COVID. And it would not surprise me, Cole, if someone lost draft picks between now and the draft because of what happened during the season with breaches and people not following the protocols. And New Orleans is a team, in my opinion, that is in the line of sight of Roger Goodell and his front office.
They definitely are. They got cautioned numerous times and fined during the regular season.